this week on the eBay for Business podcast.
I think as I would put orders out, my dad would drop them off at the post office in the morning for me. So I'd put them out. I'd put all my orders in like a medium flat rate box and he would drop it off for me. Yeah. And I think he started to realize where I'd have this big pile for him every day. And he's like, wait, are you shipping every day now? And I was like, yeah, of course I have to. I have one day shipping, Dad. And he's like, what? And I think it was this moment like, how many items are you selling a day? Like, what are you doing in your room at night? Oh my God.
I'm Brian.
And I'm Griff. And this is the eBay for Business podcast, your weekly source for the information and inspiration you need to start, run, and grow a business on the world's most powerful marketplace. And this is episode 151. Wow, it's been so long. Welcome back, Brian.
Thanks, Griff. It has been a while. I skipped last week. Thank you for, thanks, Rebecca, for filling in for me.
Yes, and we won't ask why. We'll just assume it was important.
It was.
Good. Well, we're glad you're back. And I know it's also been a very busy week last week with
eBay Open Online.
Yes. And how did it go?
It went well. It was an absolutely wonderful event from my perspective. And I know a number of sellers who reached out to me saying the same thing. I think most of our sellers enjoyed it as well.
We had our eBay Open podcast with both three leaders and then three sellers. I thought that went well.
That went really well.
And then I was busy editing and doing podcast stuff for most of the week, but I did get invited into a networking room with eBetsy and company, and it was sort of a eBay radio group party, and that was fun.
Those were fun. You know, interacting with the sellers in the networking areas was actually, to me, a highlight. At the end of the show on Friday, it was probably mid-morning on Friday, I was in one of the networking sessions, and there were a number of sellers like Teresa Cox.
Sure.
Vicky and Katie and Trish and Diane, and Trish and Diane had just done a session, and they all were talking about how the seller-led sessions were so interactive and so engaging and so good, and then that fed into the networking stuff, and I think that seller interaction and the sellers talking to sellers, it's inspirational for me when I'm in those rooms, just listening to sellers help each other, but it's also just fantastic seeing them connect with each other and meet each other and see old friends.
We may have people listening in right now who have no idea what we're talking about. We always have a yearly, or we have for many years, some years we miss them, a yearly seller conference. It's been called eBay Live in the past and then eBay in person. Now they're called eBay Open, and we normally have them in Las Vegas, but a little historic event called a pandemic has prevented that happening now for 2 years. So we've had them online, and that's what we're talking about. And Brian, for anyone who may have missed the eBay Online version of eBay Open last week, will the sessions and some of those keynotes, presentations, and speeches be available somewhere?
They will. This week, they will be made available on our eBay for Business YouTube channel. You can watch the keynotes, the sessions that are led by eBay staff, the sessions that are led by sellers. Encourage you to go check out those sessions.
And we'll put the link to the channel in our episode transcript. Or if you want to be a little DIY, you can just search on YouTube for eBay for Business, and you should find that channel as well.
For those that were registered for eBay Open Online, you will also get an email with the information and a link as well.
Okay, that's good to know. And next year, the talk is, of course, hopefully we'll all be back to an in-person version, and it would most likely, as always, be in Las Vegas. So fingers crossed for 2022.
Yes, I don't know that that's confirmed yet.
No, but, we're not. It's not confirmed. We're looking forward and being hopeful is what we are.
Yeah.
So, Brian, what's in the eBay news this week? We didn't have any news last week, as I recall, with Rebecca. Do we have any news this week?
We have three news items this week. We have an update to eBay stores. We have the next round of the eBay Up and Running grants and news from eBay Open 2021 last week. First up, eBay recently announced some important enhancements to the eBay store experience, including a refresh up on the store edit feature, a redesign for store categories, and a significant upgrade to the store newsletter. The Edit Store page now provides a new, modern, and simplified experience that will work in conjunction with more enhancements coming in the future. The new Store Categories page helps reduce the time to create and manage your store categories by allowing you to view and manage all store categories on a single page.
Oh, that is so overdue.
So overdue. And we've made it easier to communicate with buyers that subscribe to your store. You can now create a newsletter to welcome subscribers or showcase new products, build a community of repeat customers by telling your subscribers about promotions or recently added listings, and you can showcase listings in your newsletter based on rules you set. You can sort your products by newly listed, highest price, lowest priced, ending first, or even by providing a price range. Filter products by category to personalize your newsletter even further.
Well, this is all years overdue. I'm very excited about this as a store subscriber, so I can't wait to start using these new features. Now, the last rounds of the eBay Up and Running grant, they were wildly successful. A lot of people applied, and if you missed out on the opportunity to apply, or you did and you weren't chosen, don't despair. Guess what? They're back.
That's right. To help small businesses thrive online and secure their futures, eBay is announcing the return of the Up and Running Grants Program for 2021. Through the Up and Running Grants Program, 50 existing U.S.-based eBay small business sellers will receive a grant package including $10,000 in cash. Recipients will also enjoy premium access to Seller School, plus direct training and coaching from expert sellers and eBay growth advisors. The program will help ensure sellers have the funding, education, and resources to help grow their online business.
Oh, good. Now, how do we apply?
So from Friday, August 6th through Friday, which was just last week, actually, so get your applications in now, through Friday, September 3rd, 2021, eBay business sellers based in the U.S. can apply for the Up and Running grant through Hello Alice's online application at ebay.helloalice.com.
And we'll put the link in the transcript, so you need a direct link, as we always do.
And I would encourage sellers to go check out last year's winners as well and get some inspiration from those sellers.
And who can't use $10,000? So
exactly.
And our last news item before we start the show.
Well, Griff, an announcement by eBay CEO Jamie Iannone that has the seller community buzzing. The addition of the option to immediate payment for best offers and auctions.
Oh, yes. I saw some of the response to that. In fact, when he made the announcement in the keynote, the chat on the right-hand side just went wild. It went crazy.
This has been asked for since we introduced best offer.
Yes, so it's a very good thing. And there were no set dates for release, but it's now on the roadmap. And you can look forward to the option as a seller to require immediate payment for all your best offers, including the ones you send, not just the ones that are made by buyers. And eventually, as Jamie mentioned, auctions as well.
Yes.
The unpaid item thing, we can put in a grave and bury it and put a tombstone and say, good riddance.
I can't wait for that day.
I know that there are still some sellers, they tend to be legacy sellers who've been around for a long time, who are still not requiring immediate payment for items. And I don't quite understand why. And we'll talk more about this. In fact, I'll look for some sellers who can maybe want to come on the podcast and talk about why it works for them. Maybe there's something I don't know. Wait, let me rephrase that. There's a lot I don't know. Maybe there's something about this I also don't know. How's that?
And it's always good to talk to sellers. We always learn so much.
Yeah, that's true. Well, thanks, Brian. Hey, will you join me in answering a few seller questions later in the podcast?
I would be happy to.
Okay, I'll forward them to you so you can look them over in case you need to research any of them for responses.
Sounds good.
Joining us now are three eBay seller experts. Over the next 15 minutes, our guests will share their holiday sourcing, shipping, and marketing tips. On our panel now, we have eBay seller Denali Swisher. Her eBay store is El Ducho. Next up is Tim Finnegan. He has an eBay store called Riley Packaging, and he's going to talk about shipping tips for the holiday and packaging as well. And Dana Crawford, also known as the Power Selling Mom, joins us. Dana has a huge following, and her eBay store is simply Dana, D-A-N-N-A. And Dana's going to talk about marketing tips for the holidays. Welcome, sellers.
Thanks. Hello.
Hi.
Hey, everybody.
Glad to be here.
Let's start with Denali. Does your sourcing strategy change when you're leading up to the holiday selling and shopping season?
You know, I sell primarily pre-owned women's clothing. Sometimes I do have new clothing. However, with pre-owned clothing, the holiday sourcing can be a little bit more difficult because people typically aren't buying used clothing as gifts. Hopefully there's a shift, you know, in the economy and people start doing that. However, I look at more of what people might be wearing to events during the holiday season. So that might be more formal wear, dresses, sweaters, coats, stuff like that. And I try and prepare for that earlier in the year, as early as spring, but definitely during summer, stocking up on those sort of items. And then also, even a little bit past holiday, I'm already thinking about January and activewear and how people are going to be signing up for those gym memberships that they hopefully will use. So actually during the holiday season, I'm getting more activewear pieces.
February is a great time to source gym apparel since a lot of people have given up by that point.
Right. Unfortunately.
And when do you start sourcing for the holiday season?
With the formal wear, it's usually going to be a little bit earlier in the year, spring and summer, trying to pick up those pieces because a lot of people aren't grabbing those. And then for the active wear, really bulking that up in October, November, December.
You talked about pre-owned clothing not being as popular as new, but there's this phenomena that we've seen. It's been labeled conscious consumerism, and it's especially popular among Gen Z demographic. Have you seen an increase in pre-owned clothing sales for the holidays in recent years that leads you to believe this is going to continue?
I think even just beyond holiday, yeah, I mean, through holiday, but beyond that, I try and follow trends as much as I can or stay on top of them. And you spoke about Gen Z. I pay a lot of attention to social apps that they frequent, and I look at what they're buying and what they're wearing because they kind of will set the trend about a month ahead of everybody else. And you can see different parts of the country because I'm up here in Washington State. It's not as fashion forward maybe as places like Los Angeles or New York. And so I can kind of see ahead of time what sort of styles and trends that people are picking up.
What's your strategy for finding the best sourcing deals in the clothing space?
In terms of pricing, my favorite place to go to that just can't be beat is the Goodwill Outlet, which is a pay by the pound Goodwill. You can't beat the prices there and the potential profit margin, in my opinion. At my outlet, you can pay as little as, I believe, $1.09 per pound of clothing. With the increase of thrifted clothing becoming more popular, thrift stores, of course, they get hip to it and they price garments up. So you're potentially paying $12 a piece for pre-owned items, sometimes at the thrift store, and you can get it for 75 cents at the outlet. So I try and go there a couple times a week, and I tend to stay for a few hours and bulk up on as many pieces as I can.
Do you prepare thrift store apparel in any way before you list it? For example, do you repair or clean or iron it?
You know, it just depends on condition, really. If it's coming from places like the outlet, which the clothes get tossed around a little bit more in terms of laundering the garments, I do use sanitizing detergent. However, with repair, yes, I do repair some garments. I have small office with about 5 employees, and one of them is a part-time seamstress. So my seamstress is actively repairing garments for us.
Does she take outside work?
You know, for you, Griff, she might.
One of the perks of the job.
Right.
Hey, Denali, is there an eBay tool that you use a lot?
I love Terapeak. I love looking up comps. I love that Terapeak has the 365-day history. You know, I don't use comps as a hard and fast rule for looking at how I price my items, but it gives me a better idea of what it has sold for in the past year, especially looking a year back at this point, because as we're approaching fall, what were these pieces selling for in the fall time of last year? So I love Terapeak. It is incredibly valuable to me. I wish it were available on mobile. Hint, hint.
Well, it could happen.
Anything's possible, right?
Yeah. And Denali, finally, I hear you have your own podcast. What's it called and where can we find it?
My podcast is available on all podcasting platforms and it is called Flip the Script. I spend an hour picking people randomly from the reselling community and we talk about their journey. And it's so informative. It's so interesting to hear so many people's different stories and a lot of great, I would say, ideas and nuggets can be gained from it.
And there's an endless supply of those stories. So there's enough to go around.
Yes. And you can relate to them in so many wonderful ways.
Yeah. Well, Denali, thanks. Let's move on to our next seller, Tim Finnegan. Tim, the name of your eBay store is Briley Packaging. So we know you're going to have some opinions on the best way to pack and ship sold items. When packing an item to ship, what are the general rules of thumb that a seller should follow in order to best ensure that the shipped item is going to arrive safely and intact?
Well, first, it's very, very important that you know the specs of what you're selling. You need to know the length, the width, the height, the weight, determine the level of fragility. And then based on that, you pick the appropriate packaging materials to safely pack it and get it to where you want it to go. If it's a fragile item, you certainly need a strong enough box or container to ship it properly. You also need to make sure that you pack it, not just put the item in the box, but pack it properly so that it doesn't get damaged. I always say fill the void. If you put something in a box, make sure there is no voids in that box. And also, it's very important that you know then the quality of the box that you're using. And I'm assuming it's a box. It could be a mailer. It could be an envelope, similar type of a scenario. But you need to know the specification of the box itself. All of your sellers should be selling you a box with a certification seal on it. It's very important that you know what that certification seal is. It's telling you basically what that box certifies itself out to be. The most common box currently today is the 32 ECT box, and that will be seen on a seal if you look for it, if you're buying a 32 ECT. But there are other ECTs out there too. So you do need to be careful. There's ECT 23, there's ECT 44. And what does ECT mean, right, Griff?
It's another acronym.
ECT stands for Edge Crush Test. And what happens is the 32 ECT means you can put 32 pounds on edge before that box will crush. If it's 23 ECT, it means you can only put 23 pounds. If it's 44, you can put even more. 44 is more of a double wall style box for the most part. Then once you get the right material, right box, based upon the length, width, and height and weight of it, then you have to make sure you pack it properly.
That's not easy sometimes. As a buyer on eBay, I get most 90% of my items come what I view as packed properly. The item arrives safely, but that's not always the case. And it usually comes down to the seller not giving enough packing or buffering, and it gets damaged in the movements of shipment.
And your parcel delivery services aren't always the friendliest to our packages, especially during a peak time where, you know, they're so busy themselves. I mean, I've seen, I'm not going to say which parcel delivery services, but throwing it, you know, onto my doorstep. And I'm saying, oh my gosh, I hope that's not that fragile glass item that I bought on eBay. Instead, you know, some other item that doesn't matter.
You sell packing supplies. Does that change during the holiday season? Do you ramp up some stuff and ramp down other items?
You know, right now we've been wrestling, the industry has been wrestling with a lot of shortages due to some of the recent world events. There's a lot of raw material shortages that is required to make the finished product. There's an unprecedented demand on shipping itself causing difficulties. There is shortages of truck drivers, which is also making it difficult for us to get the material in and then for us to ship it out to you. So no, what we really do is right now we're just really wrestling to keep all 20,000 items in inventory. And we do have access to 5 different warehouses that we ship out of 4 different states. Our inventory is capable of being greater than perhaps some others out there. And if we have an order for somebody in Texas who wants a certain size box, it would be best for us to ship it out of our Dallas provided warehouse. But if they're out of stock, I can ship it somewhere else and still ship within the 1-day promise time and normally still make the delivery earlier than what is expected.
Excellent customer service, Tim.
I always say you over-deliver and under-promise.
Exactly. Is there a specific eBay tool that you favor?
We like to use the promotions. We like to offer order discounts, and we have tried some coupons and volume pricing situations. We also subscribe to the promoted listings that eBay offers. So we're just trying to drive more people to our listings and then hope that there's enough interest that they either buy from us or reach out to us and ask questions.
So basically all the tools.
Yeah, I think so. I mean, and it changes month to month.
Yeah, of course, as business would.
Yeah, it really does.
Well, thanks, Tim. I really appreciate it. Finally, our third panelist, Dana Crawford, whose store on eBay, as I mentioned earlier, is simply Dana. Dana, it's great to talk to you again.
Thanks, Griff.
What types of marketing do you employ and do you recommend to your seller audience through the holiday selling season?
Well, I think the most exciting thing as a marketer for your eBay business, especially, is the storytelling on Instagram and Facebook. Storytelling has become so popular, and you can create a new story every 24 hours if you like. But the great thing is you can promote your eBay items, you can promote your eBay store, and you can also talk about yourself a little bit. People like to see who's behind the scenes of that seller, and they like to see your warehouse and how you ship and some tips and tricks. And all of those types of stories will help bring business to your eBay store.
It's not just, here's a listing, come and buy it.
Right. It can't be all either me. You know, you have to share some tips and maybe some items that you're selling, how they are made, that kind of thing, some history.
Should sellers be marketing differently this year than they did last year? Are there things that should be kept in consideration when they're creating a marketing strategy?
Well, I think that it's like, just like as it selling on eBay, you follow success. So go follow eBay on social media. They pay big money, right, for marketing. Pay attention to what eBay's doing. And maybe some of your competitors, go ahead and take a look at what some other successful people are doing, people with a lot of followers, and follow success, just like listing on eBay.
If you want to know what's going to be a hot trend, go to somebody who's already spending millions of dollars and see what they're doing.
That's
eBay or a retail site. What are your most recommended social channels, and should a seller treat each one differently?
Yeah, they are treated differently. I do treat them differently. I actually have an autoresponder set up on Twitter. I don't spend a lot of time on Twitter, but I use a tool that automatically lists all of my eBay listings on Twitter. So it's automatically feeding Twitter. And I think you can get away with that on Twitter. I would lose a lot of friends if I did that on Facebook. And
it's the difference between a business and a personal account.
Yes. My Twitter is Power Selling Mom. I can get away with it. It's all about what I'm selling on eBay. And of course, on my Instagram is Dana Crawford. And I share, you know, family stuff. But I love to share what I sold. That's my favorite thing, is to share, hey, I sold this. This is how much. This is how I listed it, how I shipped it. And just treating things differently as far as the feeds go. It's not a one size fits all. Everyone is different. You can also get away with that on Pinterest. I actually have an auto feed. I have a board called my eBay store. Automatically, everything that's listed is auto fed to my Pinterest board on my eBay store. You don't need to hire a lot of helping hands. You can set it up. There are tools out there.
That's great. And I know in your seminars that you give, and when you're providing coaching to sellers, that you go into great detail about these.
Absolutely.
Where can I go if I want to learn more from Dana?
I'm actually going to be in, actually WorthPoint is sponsoring me, and we're doing eBay workshops throughout the United States.
Fantastic.
Yeah, I'm excited.
So you can visit Dana's website and see where she's going to be, or WorthPoint, and find out where their seminars are going to be.
And they're free.
And they're free. Do you have a specific tool, Dana, that you like to favor when you're listing on eBay?
Actually, my favorite is Make an Offer. I automatically set up auto decline, auto accept. And it just makes my life so much easier. And then to log into that seller hub and take a look at who you can shoot offers to, I just love doing that. And now coupons.
Oh, and coupons, of course.
Coupons, yes. So it's all good stuff. Thanks, eBay. Keep it coming.
Well, Denali, Tim, and Dana, thank you again for sharing your expertise with us. And best wishes to you all for a real profitable upcoming holiday selling season and, of course, beyond.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Our guests for this segment were eBay sellers Denali Swisher, Tim Finnegan, and Dana Crawford. We will put the links to their eBay stores in the episode transcript for episode 151.
One of my favorite things to do here is talk to sellers. And as you know, if you listen to the podcast, we get to talk to a lot of sellers who sell a lot of different things, and each one has a different story. Today, we're going to talk to a seller who has a story I've never actually featured here on the podcast. This seller is an intern currently and works with our team at eBay. Join me in welcoming now Sam Strauss. Sam, welcome.
Thank you. I'm very excited to be here. And I, as you know, I'm a big fan of the podcast.
Yes, I heard that on a recent trip to New York, you listened to several episodes.
Yes, I went straight through them. I emailed you. I said, Griff, which episode should I listen to if I can get like 10 or 12 done? And that's what I did for the whole flight.
How long have you been selling on eBay?
I have been selling since I was 14 years old, but the account used to be in my grandma's name when I started. But now it's in my name since I'm 19 and a legal adult.
What got you started at 14?
I have been a lifelong coin collector, and I've just always loved numismatics and currency and anything in that realm, to silver and gold bullion. And when I was 14 years old, starting ninth grade, I had a little bit of
discretionary money, right? That I could spend on anything I wanted to.
Mm-hmm.
And I had used, since I was 7 years old, eBay to fuel my coin collection. And so I was really familiar with bidding on different things and trying to buy something for nothing. And I came across this really cool lot of these old $1 bills. They're called silver certificates.
Oh, yes.
And it was a really good price. They were priced at barely over a dollar each. So I figured, you know, worst comes to worst, I take them back to the bank and, you know, I'm out a few dollars. But that's like, if everything fails, but I was like, I have to bid on them. I'm going to kick myself if I don't. So I bid on this lot of a few hundred silver certificates and I win. And so most of my spending money, the $200 or $300 I had at the time, is in these silver certificates. And I get them in and I'm really excited because I was like, this is cool, like so much cash. And these are something item I haven't really held in person. So I was really excited to get them and I kept one for myself. And but when I had them, I was like, these are cool. And then I had that moment where it was like, now what? Because it's, you know, they're only so interesting to look at for so long.
Exactly,
before it's like, what about like now I can't buy anything else. I'm out of money. So I was like, you know, what if I tried to sell them on eBay? And I think eBay was also running a promotion at the time where it was like, sell two items and we'll give you a $5 gift card or something like that.
Sure.
So I was like, okay, cool. Then I can like even just try to break even and I can still get the gift card and I make money and it could be fun. So I put up a listing for these silver certificates. And, you know, initially it didn't do too well because I didn't really know what I was doing. The picture was bad. I didn't know what a keyword was. I just like priced them pretty low. I also didn't even know how to ship. And then I started to look at more listings and try to understand, well, how can I get a good image? What price should I be selling them for? And what keyword should I put in the title? And I sold a few. And then like over the course of the first month, I did like $300 in revenue, which was really exciting because, I mean, I had never worked a job before, but I was like, that's $10 a day in revenue. And that's not even profit. I was making pennies. I was like working for free. I was just excited to be selling things right. that people on other states were buying or even in the same state, just people I didn't know, these strangers on the internet.
Sure.
And that was really cool to me. And so I eventually ran out of these silver certificates pretty quickly. And then
you gotta get
I was like,
more.
I don't want to. Yeah, I was like, I don't want to stop. So I go back on eBay and I find another lot of silver certificates and I buy those. And then there was this moment where it was, okay, well, I've been collecting coins my entire life, but officially, I guess you could say, since I was 7 years old, like I know so much more about that world than just old $1 bills.
Sure.
So why don't I also sell pennies, nickels, dimes, and quarters and $2 bills and $5 bills? And so I started to branch out. And about 18 months later, I grew it to a business that at its peak was doing a little over $15,000 a month in revenue, which was crazy to me as a high schooler because we would be at family, friends, like birthday parties or whatever. And, you know, they had heard in passing before, oh, Sam sells coins on eBay. And they hear the number 15,000 per month. And they're like, wait, what? Because, you know, they're like, wait a second, what are you doing that I'm not doing?
Because exactly.
Once the number gets to a certain point, people are like, What did you figure out? Or is this real? And I think my parents definitely had this funny moment where they would hear the sound of my Scotch tape roll at night creak and be like, Sam, what are you doing? And my little brother would yell because he wanted me to go to sleep. And I was just like up trying to pull this tape roll. And
in the middle of the night.
And oh my God, because I was in high school, you know, Griff, I had to study for my pre-calculus test, but I also had 13 orders to get out. So I had to make sure both tasks got done.
Yeah.
And it was this really fun process. And then I think as I would put orders out, my dad would drop them off at the post office in the morning for me. So I'd put them out. I'd put all my orders in like a medium flat rate box and he would drop it off for me. Yeah. And I think he started to realize where I'd have this big pile for him every day. And he's like, wait, are you shipping every day now? And I was like, yeah, of course I have to. I have one day shipping, Dad. And he's like, what? And I think it was this moment of like, how many items are you selling a day? Like, what are you doing in your room at night? Oh my God.
This is when you're still in your teens and eventually you're going to go to school and you were still selling, but did you continue on with your education post high school?
Yeah. So I applied to colleges in my senior year of high school, which is when the pandemic started. So that was an interesting time.
Yeah.
But I just finished my first year at Carnegie Mellon's Tepper School of Business.
Mm-hmm.
And this year I'm actually considering transferring and I should know in a week or two, but I'm either going to continue at Carnegie Mellon at the Tepper School or I'm going to go to Cornell, specifically Dyson.
And in the meantime, still selling on eBay.
Of course. So my little brother does my shipping. It's a family affair.
And are you still doing an average volume of 15,000 a month?
No, so I've scaled back a lot. So yeah. I had this moment senior year where my inventory started taking up like a lot of space. And it was like, okay, this is not the most sustainable thing with me leaving to college.
Yeah.
And at that point, my little brother, we hadn't like figured out whether or not he was going to do the shipping. So I said, okay, first let me get rid of my inventory because I have so many different SKUs right now where they're so hard to keep track of. Let me just get them all out and then start from square one because I have all these wholesale relationships now that I can leverage to get more items if need be.
What is your eBay store ID?
My eBay store ID is Sam's_coins_CA because it's Sam's Coins of California. And I, for whatever reason, a few years ago said, let's put underscores in between.
Yeah.
No. Which I kind of regret, but we'll see if I change it.
I always put every seller's who's a guest on the show, I put a link to their store in the transcript so that listeners can check you out. And who knows, sounds maybe buy something. Great. Right?
Go for it. They're cheap items too. And now you have tracking with the eBay standard envelopes. Now you can buy a $4 item from me and you know where it is in the world and how long it's going to take to get to you.
And there you go. Always promoting. I love it. So Sam, you took up a position as an intern at eBay. And normally I would ask why eBay, but it's so obvious why eBay, but tell your side of the story.
Yeah, of course. And it's funny you mentioned that because one of the people I interviewed with was Brian Burke. Brian, one of the questions he asked me, he goes, so Sam, why eBay? And I had the same response you did where I laughed a little. I mean, I feel like the writing's on the wall, Brian. Where else would I work? But yeah, so my story is eBay has been doing these Zoom seller check-ins since the pandemic, mm-hmm. which has been really interesting, where they're webinars. You actually can't see other sellers. You just see who's speaking from eBay internally. And I got an email as an invite for one. And, you know, they go to 5, 10, 15,000 sellers. So it's nothing special and it's free. And so I got this email about an eBay Zoom and I was, that's interesting. So I was like, sure, I'll sign up. So I click the link, I give them my email and I put it on my calendar. And so the day of the Zoom comes up and I had a long day of Zoom classes in college. And so I was pretty tired and I almost don't even go on the webinar because I'm like, it's been a long day. Maybe it's like, maybe this is not going to be something I'm going to want to be at. But I was like, you know, let me hop on for 5 minutes. What's the worst thing that can happen? So I go on this eBay Zoom and Jordan Sweetnam, the SVP of North America, is speaking. And I had this moment where like, what if I worked at eBay? And I was initially supposed to be a camp counselor this summer. And I love working with kids. So I was really excited about that. But I was like, you know, an internship would be cool. A company I know, like I wanted to grow more as a person. And I had been a camp counselor before and I would have enjoyed it, but I would have known what to expect. Whereas an internship at eBay would just be something completely different and new and exciting.
You're with eBay till mid-August, if I remember how the intern program works. And then you're back off to school. What are your goals after you're finished with college?
I'm not sure yet. I'd love to work at a company like eBay. I'm not sure if it'll be eBay. I mean, I'd have to get invited back, but hopefully that'll happen. Fingers crossed.
Yeah. I mean, some of our interns do come back to full-time positions at some point, so it could happen. How has your experience been so far?
Incredible. I think, Griff, across all organizations I've been a part, and I say organizations broadly, mm-hmm. from elementary school to high school to my camp and anything in between to extracurriculars, sports, et cetera. I've always loved being a part of organizations where there are great people. And if there's one thing I felt at eBay, it's an incredible sense of community where when there is a challenge or something you're working through, there is always someone who not only can help you, but wants to help you. Oh, and yeah. I think that just creates such an incredible experience where you're excited to be with the people you work with.
Have you had a chance to interface with any sellers during your internship?
Yes, I have. So it was fun because not only did I participate in more seller check-ins, but now I was on the internal side. So I was being able to see like, okay, what does it look like from eBay from an operations situation to manage a Zoom call where we get 1,000+ sellers on synchronously watching us speak live. Mm-hmm. But more personally, I've connected with sellers through working through my internship project. I've had to interview a lot of sellers and my whole internship project is actually about helping sellers. So it's been really fun to be able to engage more with the community and be able to also understand what they're saying quickly. Cause it's like, I'm a seller too. Like, I know what you're saying. Yes, it is annoying when USPS doesn't scan in your package on time. It is annoying.
Yeah, it's a perennial problem.
Exactly.
I don't think I would be fair to ask you to give details about the project you worked on, but can you give us a high altitude overview of what it was that you did this summer?
What I worked on this summer is saying we have all these sellers who have so many great ideas to make our platform better. And there are internal people who make those decisions, but they don't really have a good link to the broader seller community. So my project was helping create a bridge between all our sellers and then internally people who can help make decisions and act on their ideas to make eBay an even better marketplace.
You've finished the outline for your project. Do you think it will have legs after you've left us?
Yeah, so my project is actually live to site right now.
Oh.
If you go on community, on the community.ebay.com, and you look at seller groups, there's a tab for voices.
Yes.
And we're piloting my project in collectibles. If you're a collectible seller, go check out the forum, go read what some people are saying and upvote some ideas, and let's make collectibles a better category to sell in. And hopefully, if things go well, we're doing a 90-day beta. After that, we'll expand to other categories and then other parts of eBay, like eBay shipping, eBay payments, etc.
And again, you can find it if you go to the community page and look for the new tab that says voices on the top of any community page.
It'll be under seller groups.
So under seller
voices,
groups.
There's a seller groups tab, and then in the dropdown, voices is one of the selections.
Thank you. It's important. Sam, you've been selling for a long time. You know your category pretty well. What would be your first word of advice to a seller who's considering selling seriously, not just a casual seller, but someone who wants to emulate you and actually have a business on eBay?
I think it's understanding you're going to face a lot of problems, and not because of eBay, but because you're working with strangers on the internet, and eBay provides a great way and is a great mediator to connect to those people and sell things to them. But there are going to be people who complain about items. There are going to be bad actors. And I think learning to work through that is really what helps build a great business, and saying, okay, well, not dwelling on the negative, but focusing on the positive. And then when there are negative things that you can fix, working to fix them and solving those problems. And I think it's just overall selling on eBay is a great way to execute the skill of problem solving.
Ah, I've never heard it put that way before. That's very well said. I hear there's a particular selling bit of supply that you're really hot for right now. Do you mind if I ask you what that is?
Of course, Griff. Thermal printers. And I actually, Griff, I have two thermal printers.
Two?
Because I'm paranoid one is going to go out at one point.
Yeah.
So I have the other one there as backup in case anything goes wrong. We can just switch them out real quick.
What are the brand names?
I use DYMO, Dymo, and I use the 4XL ones so that I can print labels for normal envelopes, eBay standard envelope labels, and then full normal USPS first class labels.
Ah, okay. And what's your backup printer?
Same one.
Oh, you have two of Dymos. Oh, okay, yeah.
Same, in case one Dymo goes out.
Yeah, and you know my feeling about it, listeners, because it's one of the smartest things that you can have. It'll save you time. It'll save you money. It'll save you a lot of, well, work. You won't have to be taping labels to your packages. Once you print your first thermal label, you're going to say, I can't imagine why I haven't had one of these. Thank you, Griff, and thank you, Sam.
And let me tell you, Griff, there was one day I remember when I used to just have one of them that it was being weird and I had to clean it or something.
Yeah.
But there was one night I had to print normal ink labels on my printer. And I think it was one of the most miserable nights in my entire life. I couldn't go back to it. I had seen the good side. I'd seen the greener side. And it was a pain. I had to print them out. I'm cutting these labels out and I'm using a ton of tape. And also, like, even if it isn't a convenience thing for you, do it for the environment. I mean, you're not using tape and ink, and it's a waste. Like, there's no good that comes of printing ink-filled labels on normal printer paper.
I hope we've made our point. We're actually thinking of purchasing a few and giving them away in a podcast sweepstakes. Oops, I let the cat out of the bag.
Spoiler.
You can look forward to that in the coming months. But in the meantime, don't wait for fate to grant you one in a sweepstakes. Get one anyway. And if you end up winning one someplace, like on a podcast, you'll have two. You'll have a backup as well. Sam, I want to thank you for taking time out of your working day to talk with us here on the podcast. I really appreciate it. And best wishes with your further academic and selling career. And who knows, we may see you back at eBay someday.
Sounds great. Thank you so much, Griff.
Sam Strauss is an intern in our seller community and engagement team, and his store is sams_coins_ca.
You got questions?
Well, we got answers.
How many questions this week, Griff?
Well, we have two, but first I need to issue an addendum. So while Rebecca was filling in for you, we had a question from eBay seller John about some of his listings being removed for Vero. And we answered that question, I think, pretty well. It went on a little bit long. And in fact, I thought it went on so long that I did a little bit of editing. But what I didn't realize is he had also had a question about one of his listings being removed for excessive violence, and there were similar listings still up on the site. And I swore I answered that question, and I did when I went to the master. But what I ended up doing is editing out that whole bit, and it never got included. To John and several listeners who emailed us, I'm sorry I left that out. So here's the question again. Why was my listing removed? It said excessive violence, and there are other listings for the same, I think it's a DVD by other sellers. It's separate from Vero. Vero, as you remember from last week, is a mechanism that eBay has in place for keeping in compliance with actual federal law. But the excessive violence policy is an eBay policy. It's part of a longer policy called the Prohibited and Restricted Items Policy, which you can find on the help and contact pages. And there is one for offensive materials. One of those are listings with excessive violence. And what probably happened was a member reported your listing as possibly violating that policy, and eBay agreed and took it down. And the reason there may be other listings for the same exact DVD is that we don't police the site for these. We rely on seller reports.
Thanks to John, as well as the other listeners, for flagging that so you can provide the answer.
Yeah. And also, if you want to report them, you should report any listing that you think violates policy. Isn't there still the little report item link?
Yeah. On the right side of the listing.
You just have to report that listing, and that's how that part works. But that is a separate issue from Vero. Again, John, I hope that answers the question. And if not, you can always let us know at podcast@ebay.com.
And we can also put a link to the prohibited and restricted items policy in the transcript.
And I will do that so you can read it directly.
Fantastic.
What's our first question, Brian?
First question is from eBay seller John, who emailed us at podcast@ebay.com. And John writes, "Hello, and as always, thank you for the podcast. I have recently started selling a lot of postcards and sports cards and love the savings, the eBay standard envelope. However, I am noticing that the tracking is substandard, as a lot of items say they have never made it to their destination. However, I have already received feedback from the customer. If an item never says it reaches its destination, can the seller be penalized? Thanks, John Hayes, username His Hayes."
I sent you off to research this. What'd you find?
I asked our good friend Nate Hayward on the shipping team here at eBay for his take, and his answer was that sellers who use the eBay standard envelope automatically get valid tracking and on-time shipping metric protection for all eBay standard envelope shipments. So you don't have to worry about a lack of tracking or even a missing delivery confirmation hitting on-time shipping metrics.
That's good to know. And John didn't really ask this, but my question would be, what if a buyer claims they never received the item shipped in an eBay standard envelope? What happens then?
So I was curious about that as well. And Nate said, if a buyer raises an item not received case for any purchase shipped using eBay standard envelope, the recommendation is for the seller to make it right with the buyer by issuing a refund, and then for the seller to raise a claim against the shipment protection we automatically include with each eBay standard envelope shipment to make them whole.
That's not with the post office. You actually raise that with eBay, and eBay will cover it.
Correct.
Right. The recommendation here is to take care of the buyer first in that instance, and then make a claim with eBay, and eBay will reimburse you as the seller.
Yes. And Nate also reminded me to provide the link for the eBay standard envelope FAQ, which covers this and other eBay standard envelope topics. And we'll include it in the transcript. But for those who are listening and want to write it down, it's www.ebay.com/eBay standard envelope.
There you go. And again, we'll put it in the transcript. So, John, I hope that answers your question. I believe you sent me your shipping address. I'll double check. And if you did, I'll send you out a mug. If you didn't include it, I'll ask you with an email to send it back to us so we can send you a mug. And our next question was called into our voice line at 888-723-4630 by eBay seller Hillary.
This is Hillary with Wild Orange Emporium on eBay. My question is kind of back to another comment on your last podcast about the custom SKU. So recently, I used my phone too, and in the descriptions, I always put the custom SKU after the UPC, but lately, it's not there. If I'm making a new listing and I do that, I have to list my item and go back in and it shows up. When I do sell similar on someone else's listing and it is there, but if I do a brand new listing on my own, I get to the UPC and it's not there. I would love to have that fixed. Again, thanks so much for all your fabulous tips. I really appreciate it. Thanks so much.
I wonder what the issue might be.
Well, I did as well. Hillary's question is about a question that came in about looking for the custom label or custom SKU field
on the mobile app. And where it is, when you're listing an item on the mobile app, it's actually inside the item specifics area at the very, very bottom. So Hillary heard that and she went to look and she couldn't find it. And I verified that. And then I thought, I wonder what this could be. So we talked a little bit about on email. And then I thought, can you tell me, because I have my iPhone, what your most recent update is? And she gave me a number. And I said, yeah, your phone's out of date. You need to update the phone and then update the eBay mobile app. Those should always be kept up to date because sometimes the incompatibility with the new system might make features either disappear or not work right. I said, do that and let me know. She got back to me and she said, I updated my eBay mobile app and I updated the iOS on my phone and it works. Everything's fine. So yay.
Fantastic.
So remember the lesson here, including to myself, because I often forget, is if you're going to use your eBay mobile app on your phone, whether that's an Android or an iPhone, make sure that you keep both your phone and the mobile app updated so you don't lose access to features that you've grown really used to using.
I think that's a great tip for all of us.
Yes. And I'm going to take my own advice. In fact, I'm looking at my phone right now because I never update it. I hope. Let's see. Yes, everything's fine. Whew.
That's good.
Because I use my phone now for listing more and more. I've got a bunch of stuff that I'm listing this week, and I use my phone now.
And you know, it's interesting on the, so I have an iPhone as well, and sometimes it'll give you a little like red mark that says, hey, your operating system needs to be updated.
Yeah.
But sometimes it doesn't do that. And I don't know why they do it sometimes and not all the time. So every once in a while, I'll check and I can I might be able to update it. Definitely update it if there's a red mark and check it every once in a while.
I think there's a feature that Rob showed me where you can update automatically. So I have that turned on now as well.
I'm going to have you show me that.
And I will. In our next episode, Griff shows Brian how to make automated updates on his iPhone.
I'll probably be able to figure that one out on my own or ask one of my kids.
What good is having kids if they can't help you with your iPhone?
Exactly. If you have a question you'd like answered in an upcoming episode, please call us on 888-723-4630.
Yes, and that's 888-723-4630. And leave your question on the voice recorder and include your shipping address. If we use your question, we'll send you an eBay for Business podcast mug. Offer good until supplies run out.
And that offer is good for emailed questions as well. Our email address is podcast@ebay.com. That's podcast@ebay.com. And either way, do leave your shipping address so we can send that mug to you.
Yes, and if you haven't figured it out yet, we really want to get rid of these mugs. Before we sign off, it's podcast checklist time. Make sure you
check the announcement board for up-to-date seller news.
Check your supplies. Make sure you have an ample supply for the upcoming holiday shopping season of your inventory and your shipping and packing and little cards and little stickers and everything you need.
Check out the transcript for this and all episodes for follow-up on what you've heard and to see the links we referenced during the episode.
And speaking of episodes, on our next episode 152, we'll talk with Stephen Weller, another eBay employee who sells full-time on eBay. And we'll have three eBay leaders to talk about what's up for the eBay marketplace in the next year.
We'd like to again thank our guest this week, eBay intern Sam Strauss, and our three seller panelists, Denali Swisher, Tim Finnegan, and Dana Crawford.
The eBay for Business podcast is produced and distributed by Libsyn and Podcast 411.